This is Watch the Media. Thank you so much for being with us. We're going to do some heavy-duty talk about journalism and how it's practiced in the 21st century with one of America's most accomplished sports journalists, Tim Kuehn. He's senior writer for ESPN. He was one of the originals when ESPN launched ESPN the Magazine. They no longer publish the magazine, as Tim calls it, the late great ESPN the Magazine. But he continues to publish long-form journalism at ESPN.com. And then, of course, he appears on the other platforms, radio, television, podcasts, specifically the ESPN Daily podcast.
Tim, LaMelo has been famous for basically his whole life. He and his family star in the widely viewed, widely shared Facebook reality show Ball in the Family. And they have millions of followers on social media, and LeVar never misses an opportunity to talk about how great his sons are at basketball. So I'm curious about how much of the hype surrounding LaMelo might be a byproduct specifically of this marketing strategy.
Oh, I think it's a big part of it. There's a lot of smoke out there that sort of obscures the central question, which is how good is he? Because everything is glossy and really, in a weird way, almost corporatized at this point. Mm. After being sort of organic to start. As an aside, Pablo, I asked LaMelo about the Ball in the Family Facebook show, and he says he's never watched it. And he goes, well, because it's pretty much what I've lived, so why would I watch it again?
Man. A lot of what we know, Tim, is through the prism of LeVar. And LeVar might be more famous than all of his sons combined. And to your characterization of him, he's always struck me, at least, as this AAU dad who's kind of doing an impression of a WWE wrestler who is also doing an impression of Stephen A.
1-on-1, I'm undefeated, never lost.
Will you stop it?
I've known Tim Kuehn for close to 30 years. He worked at the San Francisco Chronicle in the days I worked at KNBR Radio in San Francisco. This is a conversation about journalism, about quality journalism, and how it's created. Welcome aboard. I'm John Schrader. Tim Kuehn is senior writer for ESPN and has been there for more than 20 years, started in the late 90s when they created ESPN, the magazine, and has now worked his way into much more than that, though I think he probably would say at heart he's a writer and he's a reporter and he's a feature enterprise guy. Tim, thank you very much for sharing some of your much of your knowledge with us. We appreciate it.
No problem. Glad to be here, John.
And just for the benefit of our University of Nebraska students, Tim's brother was a longtime professor in the Ag College at the University of Nebraska. So Tim is familiar with what we do in Lincoln. So,
yes,
there you go. So we want to talk about the process of this. And it isn't just any longer coming up with an idea or pitching an idea. And then you write your 3,000 or 4,000 or 5,000 words and you get a certain amount of time and leeway and freedom to go do that. But you have to do much more now than that. Can you give us an idea of what you have to do just generally when you get a story, create a story idea? And do you have to think about more than just the words you have to put on the page?
Oh, definitely. And I think that, as a lesson to young aspiring journalists, that there are a lot of things in how my career has sort of morphed into this multimedia, not always multimedia, but often multimedia when I write a story. A lot of it is that we as a former magazine writers, because our magazine no longer exists, we still do magazine style writing, but it's not in a printed version anymore. We have sought to remain relevant within the company. And we are our group, which is called the Storytelling Group, is remained relevant because we do things nobody else can do. We get access other people can't do. We go into depth. We're given time and resources that is really still seen as very valuable to the company. So in order to kind of maximize all these things, including access and our our ability to really dive into a topic or a person and understand it as well as we can. You know, we try to branch out to other parts of the company, whether it's doing the ESPN Daily podcast on the day that one of our stories comes out, or doing an essay for Outside the Lines on the topic. And to be less general and more specific, there's a story, one in particular that started out as simply a magazine story or an online story on Trey Lance, the North Dakota State quarterback now with the 49ers prior to the NFL draft. The way to take you through this genesis of this is that, you know, my editor came to me and said, basically, what quarterback do you want to profile for the lead up to the draft? Because we tend to do a lot of quarterback stories. And my inclination generally is to go to the person who's least known, right? The one that carries the most intrigue. And clearly Trey Lance was that guy this year. So we got a little bit of a late start. Not to go too much into the detail of the politics of it, but I never spoke to Trey because he had an obligation with Sports Illustrated. He had given his people had given an exclusive to lead up to the draft to Sports Illustrated. So their writer was able to watch him train and do all these things, go around with him. Okay. That happens all the time. I've been the beneficiary of that. So that's no big deal. So the reporting was around him, and it was through his parents and his coaches and his old teammates. And, you know, I ended up, his dad mentioned something about a YouTube video where Trey had done kind of what I'm doing right here with a bunch of second graders from his old school. And I got a hold of that, the Zoom call, the recording of it. And I kind of based my story on that. So I felt like Trey was alive in the story. He was an organic part of this story. And it's kind of cool because a lot of people don't, when they read that story, they're surprised even afterward. Oh, you didn't talk to Trey because he was in there a lot. So anyway, that's beside the point. But so when that story came out, it wasn't intended to be anything more than a story that shows up on ESPN.com and gets good play. And hopefully, you know, a million people read it, which I think is about what that one hit. So in the course of that, you know, the story gets sent out to other editors, other parts of the company. So I ended up doing the ESPN Daily podcast with Pablo Torre the day that the story came out. Outside the Lines read it and thought, hey, this could be a nice essay for us leading into the draft. You know, we'll get Tim to do a 3.5-4 minute essay on who is Trey Lance. And so that lived, that essay lived on SportsCenter even after that, I'm pretty sure. So it becomes sort of a kind of a living organism, these stories, where they get either, you know, you focus on one aspect of it for a television feature or an essay. It just becomes, it's just a way, and I have to say, as you know, John, from knowing me way back when, I never intended to be a television guy, and it still is not something that comes naturally or particularly willingly. But you know, it's survival essentially, and it is something that I've learned, and I'm always at the mercy of the producers when we do a TV feature because they know so much more than I do, and I can learn a lot from them. In the course of doing, I don't know, probably 25 to 30 of them over my career, I've been able to become more comfortable with it, kind of get the flow of things, be able to think on my feet a little bit better, which is all part of what we do as reporters. But when there's a camera on you, it's a little bit harder, I find, to be quick, you know, and to think on my feet. So we can talk about other stories, but I'll stop for now on the Trey Lance.
So yeah, I do want to dig a little deeper on Trey Lance. And so one of the lessons there of the many is that you don't just stop with your story idea if the principal can't or won't talk to you. The lesson there is that you don't let that get in the way. You find ways to make the story work. right? And not let the audience know what your problems are, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And that's the other thing is that, you know, there are times when you have to say this person refused to speak to me or whatever, but this wasn't that case because it was just a young guy, you know, there's a lot of this back and forth that goes on behind the scenes and before we even talk to somebody with agents and reps and so forth. And I think that especially around like something like the NFL draft that agents, and I will say good agents, because a lot of times that they are the ones who are protecting their guys the most, they are trying to limit the variables, right? They don't want the unknowns that, like, if they can, you know, we can argue about Sports Illustrated, whether that's relevant enough now to be, you know, whether you wouldn't rather just do ESPN and do TV and print and have it done. But, you know, guys have relationships with certain writers. The guy who did that story was excellent and did a good job. So you're right. You don't care why I didn't get to talk to Trey Lance when you're reading that story. You're reading for Trey Lance. You're not reading for my problems. So it ended up working out, and mainly because his parents were so wonderful and they, you know, they tried to get Trey to talk to me, but there were barriers there that even they couldn't overcome.
So I'm curious about how the podcast daily works into this. It's a relatively new element. And everybody is doing it, if I can say that. But how much do you direct the way that conversation goes based on what you've written or what you've learned or the reporting you've done?
You know, usually there's a conversation either with the producers or with Pablo Torre before I go on, or Mina Kimes before that, where we just sort of outline the basics of it and they tell me what they most liked about it. There's a pacing to it also. It's not just, it is, I wouldn't call it scripted, but there are many times where we say, okay, we're going to lead up to this moment that you wrote about, but I want to save it for after the break or whatever. Let's do it sequentially and not running it out there as, you know, the way I'm talking right now. You know, mm-hmm. we're more, everything is a little bit more structured and intended for impact and to lead the listener the same way I tried to lead a reader. Is that we want, if we have something, some big reveal or some moment in the story, we want to build to that. And that is where those guys, you know, the people, Pablo and Mina before him, they're really, really good at that pacing and at getting leading you in the right direction at the right time. So yeah, it isn't, there is work involved in that. Doing the podcast that takes maybe 30 minutes to listen to is probably a two and a half hour, you know, operation from start to finish with the producers and with the host. So, you know, and it's recorded. So we stop and start over and things like that can mm-hmm. happen. And that's why it sounds so good. I mean, maybe not when I'm on there, but it generally sounds really good because they know how to do it.
I guess I'll start by, kind of introducing myself a little more. My name's Trey Lance. If you don't know who I am, I grew up in Marshall. I think the furthest I've ever thrown a football is like 79 yards. I think I could beat it now today, though, if I try.
That is quarterback Trey Lance introducing himself to grade schoolers in his tiny hometown of Marshall, Minnesota. And now to you. The 20-year-old from North Dakota State is projected as a top 10 draft pick, maybe even top 5. But no top prospect in memory feels more mysterious or more perplexing to draft experts. Today, the story of who Trey Lance is and how he got here. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Wednesday, April 14th. This is ESPN Daily. Tim, thank you for joining me, man.
Hey, good to be here, Pablo.
So I'm bringing you on for a specific reason, and that is I don't know anything somehow still about Trey Lance. I feel like you could walk into the room I'm sitting in right now, and I would not necessarily know if that is, in fact, Trey Lance. So how did you start your profile of this guy, Tim?
Well, Pablo, it's interesting you'd say that because, you know, it's almost like he was created to torment NFL evaluators.
Tim Kuen is a senior writer for ESPN whose profile of Trey Lance is on ESPN.com right now.
He's from an FCS school. Even though he won a national championship, he only had 17 starts. Competition he played against wasn't at the level of an SEC or a Power 5 conference. So there are all these questions about him, and yet the talent is undeniable.
And the beautiful thing is that maybe you're 2.5 to 3 hours, and then there are many more hours spent after that, post-producing, editing in comments, editing in media cuts, dropping in a little bit of music. It really is, in my view, a new, exciting, not that new, but it's an exciting way of storytelling that really captures the audience. And I'm sure you get a good response from that, don't you?
Definitely. And it's funny because to me, it's like a throwback. It's almost an old fashioned going back to radio serials days where you would listen to a story, a fiction story over the radio before we were so tied to visual media. It's a cool thing. It's I like the fact that it is structured. It's not just two guys talking for an hour on whatever comes to mind. And I think that's the brand, right? The ESPN brand is everyone can have their own podcast and do that thing where they talk about the pick and roll for 45 minutes. But I think that the ESPN Daily likes to be topical. It likes to showcase some of the work that we do, which is great.
So one of these multimedia enterprises you've done here in the last year was, I don't know if it was an introduction for people, but an inspection of of LaMelo Ball. Who is this guy? We've heard so much about, as you say in your piece, either the famous balls or the infamous balls, however you look at it. Let's kind of dissect that a little bit. Where did that start and how did that end up being such a multimedia enterprise?
That story, John, started out as kind of our post magazine franchise, which is called Cover Story, which we try to do once a month, where we usually almost always it's a profile of somebody. It's essentially a cover story without the magazine. We do a cover shoot. We do a fancy layout when the story appears. And one of the elements of that is again, in the topic of staying relevant, is a 6-minute roughly Sports Center feature that we do.
Just take another dribble and then throw G the hook pass. Finish it. There we go.
LaMelo Ball is the most famous player in this year's NBA draft.
Here we go, Melo, one stand up.
But he also remains its biggest mystery.
Let's get a photo.
He went through a teenage experience that I would not want.
LaMelo Ball is in the conversation for being the first pick in the NBA draft.
Most hated high school athlete of all time.
Some teams say, we don't want the headache.
That's just my dream, man, to be number one pick, play in the NBA.
If he were to actually be the number one pick in the NBA,
that'd be a stunner, wouldn't it?
I would clap, I would say hooray.
Okay, let's do it.
Now, LaMelo Ball is setting out to prove his talent measures up to his fame.
Now turn around, look profile for me.
Yep, that's dope.
I'm Tim Kuen, and this is ESPN Cover Story.
So, LaMelo Ball was an obvious choice given his you know, given his name recognition, coupled with the fact that there still was a lot of intrigue about him as a player, because he had never really played in the United States in a high profile way. Didn't play college, really didn't even, I mean, his high school career was as close as it gets. But so obviously, you know, his story and his family and everything, given that he's considered the best player in the family. He was playing in Australia at the time, which presented some logistical issues just because it was hard at first to kind of pin them down to a time and when we were hearing things that he was maybe going to leave Australia because he was injured and he wasn't going to play anymore. Anyway, I ended up going to Australia on about 36 hours notice when we got word that he would talk to us. So, you know, I flew to Sydney. He was playing living in a city about 2 hours south of Sydney, a smaller town called Wollongong. And he was there with his trainer and his trainer's family, Jermaine Jackson. Anyway, I spent about 4 or 5 days there, got to know them, had a good rapport with them, which was key to that whole story, to get someone to commit to the number of hours that they have to commit to do something like this, to do the TV interviews, to do the photo shoot, which can be almost an all day affair. I mean, it can be a easily 4 or 5 hour operation with the photographer and to do it right with the wardrobe changes. It's an undertaking, and not everybody wants to do it. Many athletes just don't want to give that amount of time to something like this. They did more often before when there was a physical magazine, which is an interesting little sidebar that is, that we've fought in recently, is that these guys, even young guys, still like the idea of that physical magazine cover framed in their house. You know, they just, that's a big deal. So anyway, this started out as cover story. So I knew that we weren't sending anyone down there to explain to them what this all entailed and how it was going to work. It was just, I had to show up and be the salesman as well as the reporter, you know? So it was, and it worked great because they were receptive, as is the case most often. It's not necessarily the athlete himself that you have to convince. It's the people around him who will convince the athlete that, yes, this is something you should do. So that was the course of that. I spent 4 or 5 days reporting in Australia. Thinking back of all the things that happened at this time, this was in January of 2020 toward the end. So we all know what happened in the 6 weeks after that, where the world essentially shut down. So I was flying back from Australia at the time when they were just talking about whether the flights were going to get, if Australia had basically kept, they had got very close to stopping all flights onto the island. So anyway, there was a lot of logistical difficulties with this story, because when we came back, I didn't do the television story down there. I did the reporting for the magazine piece, or at least some of it. I keep saying magazine, for the cover story. So when we came back, we went down to their home in Los Angeles, which was okay for me because I could drive there, even though ESPN had really curtailed travel at that time. This was seen as kind of important enough, and we had already gotten the start on it. So we did a day of shooting at their house in Chino Hills outside of LA. And then what we did was we didn't have time. We had to do it in one day, and we wanted to break it up. So we did the family. We did LeVar, we did LiAngelo, we did Lonzo, and we did Jermaine Jackson, who's the trainer. So we held off on LaMelo, waiting for the main character, figuring, okay, he's going to be in Los Angeles. They had told us he would be in LA. turns out when we went to do it, he had gotten out of Los Angeles and had gone to Detroit, where his trainer lives, and was working out there. So it became another issue of, okay, we've started this in person with these television interviews. We can't switch to Zoom. We can't just have this. It would look so bad if we had in-person interviews and then here I am talking to the main guy on Zoom. So after much wrangling, I ended up going to Detroit and we did the LaMelo interview in person in Detroit, and they did the photo shoot there. So this was a process. I mean, this was something that ended up being, you know, a long, the logistics overtook the story in some ways, where I had to sit down and say, okay, I can't think about where I'm going to be next week or whatever. I need to sit and write this and make sure that the writing carries whatever else happens, because that's kind of my motto, is that none of this other stuff would be possible if I couldn't write, right? I mean, that's the thing with this multimedia stuff, is that if you look at the people who have made it huge in media, who have gone from into television, from Dan Le Batard and Mina Kimes and Pablo Torre, it all starts with an ability to write. And I think that's where you branch out from there. And yeah, so anyway, that it ended up being a 6-minute SportsCenter feature that was beautifully produced by one of our great feature producers. And we ended up doing the podcast. I believe that the story lived also on Outside the Lines. It had, you know, they one of the things that is interesting for the students is that when you cannot take a 5,000 word feature story and turn it into a 6-minute television piece and cover everything, right? You can't. So the key to this is that the cover story, rather than being a condensed version of the written piece, is intended to focus on one or two aspects of the person. We fudged that a little with LaMelo because his journey kind of became the story, and the journey was kind of the magazine or the written piece as well. So anyway, that was the way that came out, and obviously the draft was delayed, so we ended up having a little bit more time, and it was one of those things where it came out where it felt like, finally, you know, we find this. It almost was crazy how long of a timeline that the reporting and the work on that story took. It was one of the longer ones I've ever done.
I'm trying to be the number one pick for the 2020 draft, so started playing since I was 3, so it's just my dream, man. And then that's everybody's goal, to be number one pick, play in the NBA.
Tonight, the hopes and dreams of 14 NBA franchises will hinge on a set of bouncing ping pong balls that will decide their fate. The player who many think is the ultimate prize? An 18-year-old kid who has been in the public eye for years, and yet somehow has remained largely unknown. Today, ESPN senior writer Tim Kuen brings us an up-close look at LaMelo Ball and tells us whether the youngest Ball brother can ever live up to the hype that comes with being part of basketball's most famous or infamous family. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Thursday, August 20th. This is ESPN Daily. Tim, thank you so much for joining me, man. I appreciate it.
Hey, I'm glad to be here, Pablo. Thank you.
So I wanted to have you on today because tonight is the NBA draft lottery, when we find out which team, maybe Golden State, maybe Cleveland, maybe Minnesota, gets the number one overall pick. And I have to admit something to you first off. When LaVar Ball went on First Take in June of last year to declare that his youngest son, LaMelo, would be the number one overall pick.
Melo is going to be number one pick 2020. Because
LaMelo,
he's that good. He's that good. I guarantee you, dude, because he that dude.
He's going number one
that
overall.
That dude, number one.
I laughed. I did not believe him. But LaMelo, the subject of your ESPN cover story out today, is not only in the mix for...
Well, you have the luxury, and I know you appreciate this immensely, of the resources of ESPN. So if you need 4 or 5 days in Australia, you can do that. If you need another 2 weeks or 2 months to work on a piece, you can do that. And I know how much you appreciate that.
No, it's a incredible. I'm incredibly fortunate that we have that backing and that we are, you know, that we can do those things. And thankfully we're starting to get back to that now. So that's a good thing. Cause it was a long 18 months or 15 months where it was hard to do stories.
It's about the reporting and the writing. It's about the storytelling. You say your group is called the Storytelling Group, right? And so, but you've alluded to it, doing 6 minutes for a TV piece is not like 5,000 words. It's not like writing an essay for Outside the Lines. It's not like doing a podcast, the daily podcast. How do you then compartmentalize all of these things? And did it take you, or how did you then learn the process of telling stories outside of your comfort zone, which is 5,000 words? Now you have to do it in these other formats.
Yeah, I think that, again, this is where I lean on, I know my limitations. So I lean on the producers who do this every day and do it with the talent that is accustomed to doing it. So everything, I ask questions and I follow directions a lot of times, but I do find that when I do the TV pieces that it really comes back to the relationships that I have with people. And so I think a lot of times, like if I spend 5 days with LaMelo Ball in Australia, and then I spend a couple days with him at his home in Los Angeles, by the time I get to Detroit and sit down, you know, with my tie on to do the actual TV interview, we're comfortable, right? I mean, there's no, he knows where I'm coming from. We kind of we've already asked the questions because I've done the reporting for the written piece. So it becomes more of a conversation. And I think that's what we're striving for in television. It's not like I just show up, you know, a lot of the TV people, that's how their job works, is they show up, do the interview and move on. And that's fine. That's how it works. But I have the luxury of having this background with people where I've dealt with them. We've developed I know how they're going to answer certain questions, right? So I can take them in places that I know where it's going to go. I mean, in the LaMelo Ball instance, I had asked his dad on camera just as a, I don't even know why I thought of it, but I said, what would you have done if LaMelo at age 15 had said, Dad, I don't want to play basketball, I want to be a veterinarian? And he just, you know, laughed and, oh, well, you can do that, but I'm not going to be there for you. It was like typical LaVar Ball answer. So LaMelo hadn't heard that conversation. So when I had him on camera in Detroit, I asked the same question and he gave a great answer that included an expletive that his dad would have said. But I think it was something like, get the F out of the house or something. But, so yeah, I mean, that kind of moment really isn't possible unless I've done the reporting prior to that. You know, that there's not the ease of me asking it and him answering it if we didn't have a little bit of a background in a relationship that I knew would make something like that work, that I could be kind of silly with a question and he would answer it that way.
So is this simply the way it works? Is you have an idea, the editor has an idea, and you're going to do LaMelo Ball. And then when you've done all the reporting, you sit down and do your 5,000 words, and then you write an essay for Outside the Lines, if that's the case. And a producer's working on the television bit, and then you sit down with Pablo Torre and do the radio bit. Is that simply kind of the way it works?
It is. And I think that, you know, the way to get at the podcast side of it is that usually we do that the day before the story is posted online. So it's kind of like we record it the day before, and then concurrently with the written story and the TV feature, everything comes out the same day. It's kind of like, you know, kind of like a book release, right? They try to maximize the number of people that are going to see this, and they try to use it as a, you know, the TV piece is almost like a publicity arm for the written piece, and maybe vice versa, because they kind of go back and forth and try to draw eyes every direction, right? And ears if it's the podcast. So yeah, it is generally with me that the work starts with the written piece. The reporting on that also allows me to understand whether the TV piece is even possible, right? You know, it can be something that is sometimes doesn't start out as a TV piece, and I'll talk to my editor and she'll say, you know, well, why don't you see if they'll, maybe we can pitch this to SportsCenter or somebody and get this, or Outside the Lines or whatever. So the cover story, which was the LaMelo, is a little bit different because it's defined from the beginning what we're going to do. But there are times when a story takes a turn that, you know, could work on other platforms, and we try to maximize those.
Tim Kuhn is senior writer for ESPN. He's with us this time around on Watch the Media. I'm John Schrader.
Tim, you've been doing this for quite a while now. I'm not going to age you, but this is more than a couple of years. I mentioned that you've been at ESPN for a long time. What is it that keeps it fresh for you, that makes you excited about this, that keeps you at the top of your game? What is it that still excites you about this work every day or week or month or year?
Well, it probably sounds like a cliche, but it's different every time. That's what it's new people, it's new stories. I'm fascinated by how athletes' minds work and how they get to where they are. I was having a conversation with, I recently did a big feature on the San Francisco Giants and just how is this the best team in baseball, essentially. And, you know, I'm fascinated by how teams work and how individuals work. And you know, I was having a conversation with one of their pitchers, and we were talking about how the night before our conversation, the 20,000th player to appear in a major league game had debuted in Seattle, I think. And we were just going into the idea that we were standing in the ballpark in San Francisco and looking around, and it's like, you know what, that wouldn't even fill half of this place. I mean, if you put every guy who ever played in the major leagues for even a minute, they wouldn't be half of this. And it just, when we were having this conversation and he was kind of looking up, I could see he was kind of putting himself in whatever line in the team photo he would be, you know, and just that kind of thing. I try never to lose sight of the fact of how good these guys have to be there, and what, that there's something that separates them from the other 20,000 that might've been more talented that never made it. So I don't know. And I also still really like the writing process for the most part. Sometimes it's torture, but I like sitting down and trying to write something entertaining and to find a theme and to put it together. It hasn't gotten old yet. And I hope it doesn't.
You talk about your respect for the athletes and what it takes to be at that level. Do you think that's part of, do you think the athletes and the coaches understand that? And that's part of how you get in the door in some places that others haven't, how you get people to answer your phone when they don't answer the phone when others are calling?
You know, I think it helps. And I would not minimize the fact that those four letters ESPN open a lot of doors as well. But yeah, I think that, you know, once I start, it may not get me in, but once I start talking to somebody and they get that, you know, there's a, and I'm not above criticizing somebody, but what I do is generally not, I'm not a hot take guy. So I'm not like, you know, this guy sucks or this guy's great, or, you know, you didn't win a championship, so your career is fraudulent, or whatever those kind of things, whatever sort of moves the needle in that world is not my, it's never been my thing. It's just not something that I, to be honest, care enough about. I just don't. I care about the people that I write about and the stories that I choose that interest me. So, maybe it starts with there. Is that I'm in a fortunate position where almost probably 95% of the time, the stories I'm doing are the stories that I want to do, right? That I have an interest in, that keeps me fresh. I'm not being told, hey, you know, we haven't done a story on this guy, go out and see what he's about. There's more thought put into it than that. So, I think that I've sort of developed a conversational interview style that gets people talking. And if it means that they see that I respect what they do or have an interest in what they do, and that keeps them going, then that's great.
So you were a columnist for a while in San Francisco. Would you find that to be a difficult job now because of the takes that need to be hotter and hotter and hotter to get attention?
I don't know. I mean, I still occasionally will write columns for ESPN, and I wrote a column for years at ESPN as well. And it just feels like it's funny because as the hot take industry has blossomed, the column industry has kind of died in a way. You know, there's not, it's more of a, you know, it's more of a 40 word on TV take than a 800 word in print take. So, you know, I think when I was a columnist, I had opinions, but I don't think they were, I don't know. They felt more reasoned than some of the hot takes now. You know, I wasn't just doing something to get a reaction. That has never been my thing. So I think it would be kind of hard. I don't know. You know, if someone was telling me that I had to have an opinion on something, I think I'd find it difficult because, again, I sounds funny being a sports writer, but I just don't care enough about a lot of that stuff. I think it would be difficult now.
So you just said that you know, you got 4 or 5 days in Australia and sometimes you get more. You've told me a story in the past where you tried to do a piece with Barry Bonds and you went to the clubhouse every day and you ended up interviewing him in Montreal or Toronto or somewhere else. For the advice I'm asking for is for young people getting in the business who don't have 4 or 5 days, maybe they have 1 or 2 days, but really want to do a quality inspection of someone's life or something. What advice would you give somebody who doesn't have that kind of time and resource, but still needs to do an awesome job?
Well, I think sometimes you can even, and I've been in this position as well, where you don't even get a one-on-one with the person. You have to improvise. You have to be, my rule is that I have to be observant. I have to, if my only time with a guy is when, or girl is when they are walking into they're in a press conference setting. I make sure that I'm outside watching them walk down the hallway to get to that room and then walking up. You know, if I know that's my only access, I'm going to try to find whatever I can in the way they walk or who they're talking to or what they're saying, without, you know, not to say I'm eavesdropping, but just in general, I'm trying to get an insight into someone's personality and that relates to what they're doing, what I'm writing about, which is generally their playing ability. So that's a thing for me, is that I'm always trying to observe and catch little, unguarded moments that might resonate when, after the person says something at a press conference, I can say, oh, well, that makes sense, 'cause I just saw him talking to somebody and saying something, you know, whatever. I'm just spitballing here, but I think that's the way that I try to do it. I try to get to a baseball game early enough that I watch batting practice and I see how a guy interacts with his teammates or how he moves on the field, what kinds of things he's working on, so that when I am ready to interview that person, I'm ready, right? Like I have something that I can say, hey, I noticed that, you know, you were trying to hit the ball the other way the whole time, you know, are you going to, you know, I try to use something that shows this person that I'm paying attention and that it matters to me that I get it right and that I'm interested. Oftentimes you can get a lot more in 10 minutes if you, I'm not suggesting you write questions down in advance because that's a recipe for disaster, I think, because you never follow up, but if you have ideas in mind that you can do, you have like very tangible observations that you can get somebody to talk about. People love to talk about themselves, and they love to be noticed for things that they do well or that they're trying to get better at. And so I think that that's something that is, for me, a way that I can offset a lack of time or access.
And do whatever you can to get family, friends, coaches, adversaries, rivals, whoever fits into that picture, right?
Definitely. Yeah. Just making your way through a, you know, someday we will again, but making our way through a clubhouse or a locker room and, you know, finding out who somebody is close with on a team, or how that, you know, that there's somebody that, you know, a receiver quarterback combination, whatever. You just, you get in and talk about these people, and talk to the people who are closest, who might be able to have insight that you can take back to the main guy. If you have a short amount of time, if you have 10 minutes with somebody, you need to come armed with as much as you can. And what I find is that that 10 minutes that's either been mandated, 15 minutes it's been mandated by a PR guy or by an agent, can often turn into 45 if the person wants, if you present yourself in a way that the person wants to talk to you. You know, they once you get them, they are in charge of their time, and they often will, they, if they are enjoying the conversation, they'll keep going.
What kind of feedback do you get from the sources of your stories? Do they come back to you occasionally and say that sucked, or that's what I said, or that was awesome, that was beautiful? You get much of that?
You know, I don't get a lot of that. And it's partly because one of the downsides is that most of the time when I do something, I'm not back in front of that person for a while. You know, it's not something, I'm not like a beat writer where I'm in the clubhouse, the same clubhouse every day, so that there's more back and forth. You hear through people, you know, you hear through their representatives or whatever, that they come back and say, hey, so-and-so, you know, they thanks for that. You know, that's about as much as you can expect is a thanks, or that was good, or they liked it. You know, occasionally you'll get, you know, I have a bunch of my covers framed in my office, and one of them is signed by Roger Federer, who liked the story, and he sent it to me, you know, and that was really cool. Like, that's something that I look at that and think, okay, you know, I'm not big on memorabilia and stuff, but seeing that is kind of cool to look up and think that, you know, somebody, and you know, I will say, and this is, again, I do find that the way that I learn whether people liked what I did is when I come back and try to do another story with them. And that's something that I've been able to do a lot, is to go back and do, you know, for instance, I did a first story on Manny Pacquiao probably, oh gosh, 12, 15 years ago. And it all led, I did probably three or four at the same time I was doing cover stories with Floyd Mayweather. And I think that the Pacquiao, like every time I would go back, they would be open to me coming. And it led to in 19, it was probably right before I went to Australia. It was around December of 2019. I actually went to Manila and spent a week following Manny Pacquiao around as his job as a senator in the Philippines, because it's becoming clear that he's going to run for president in 2022. And there's a lot going on in that country with him and Duterte, and they were aligned. Now they've had a falling out. It's a big thing. So now Manny is training for his next fight in Los Angeles. And later this month, I'm going to go down there and probably do a story about how he's had this breakup with Duterte. So it's not as much sports. It is sports. It's why is this guy still fighting at his age with all he has and going on outside of boxing. But it's also just a story about somebody who may end up being the most powerful athlete in the world if he ends up being the president of a country with more than 100 million people. It's kind of a crazy story.
How much do sources appreciate honesty, even if it's not flattering?
You know, I think it's dependent case by case in a lot of ways. Pacquiao, the story I did when I was in the Philippines was not particularly flattering. A lot of it was about his support for the death squads for the drug users and dealers in the Philippines, which is Duterte's kind of one of his main campaign point and one of his main, you know, principles as a president. So that there was a lot. I mean, I talked to a lot of human rights people who had problems with him, and you know, I didn't hear any pushback from them. The fact that it was honest, that I had portrayed him fairly. I mean, he said things that I'm sure a lot of people didn't agree with, but they were things that he said. You try to let the person, in a lot of ways, let them decide how they're going to be portrayed in some cases, without trying to do too much to push the reader in one direction or another, I think is the way to go. But I think that they do. I think people do appreciate honesty. Now, there are times when, you know, the guys don't get sarcasm or things like that. I've had, you know, many cases like that in the past. But that's just part of the game.
Reminds me to remind folks that writing about sports oftentimes isn't really just writing about sports. It's about people and what makes them tick and where they're going and how they got there and those kinds of things, right? I mean, that's really what it is.
Yeah, it's people. I feel like I could go and do the same job as a writing about government or you know, not that I would want to, but Hollywood. It's all about people. It's about how they've reached the, it's psychology and sociology and sometimes, like with Manny Pacquiao, it's politics. And so it's just, you know, it's I've had a lot of time since we have not traveled much in the last year and a half to sort of be grateful of all the things I've been able to do and that, you know, those things where I've been able to sort of jump out of a specific sports story and write about something like, you know, a senator in the Philippines and to sit through their sessions and to, you know, that it's just, it's a cool part of the job is to be able to take the sports and move it into another realm at times.
Well, Tim, thank you very much for your time and your expertise and spending so much time with us talking about what you do and how you do it. We appreciate it.
Oh, no problem. Good luck to you guys. And I enjoyed the conversation.
Tim Kuhn is senior writer for ESPN and has been since the late 1990s.
The character, everything checks out. And yet he is still this relative unknown just because of all these circumstances that include pandemic-related cancellations, the fact that he played one game in the last year. He's really a fascinating study because somebody's going to take him very high in the draft, and you get the feeling that they aren't going to be completely sure what they're getting.
Yeah, he is one of the top five quarterbacks in this year's draft, Tim. Let's just start at the beginning here with young Trey Lance in Marshall, Minnesota, with his parents, Carlton and Angie Lance. What was his football career like at Marshall High School?
His football career at Marshall High in a town of about 14,000 people, a three-hour drive west of Minneapolis, was very under the radar. He had always had the physical skills.
Third and 10 from their own 23-yard line, just 3-0 in favor of Marshall. Lance under center here as he will roll out to his right. Trey fires it on the run. Catch, first down. Is that a dart by Trey or what?
And that's the play that we've seen Trey do all season long. On the run, can throw it perfect.
He played on a high school team that had to travel 3 hours to play a school of comparable size. They were often ahead 40-0 at halftime, so his stats were incomplete at best. You know, he went his whole junior year without playing an entire game until late in the playoffs. So the data set is very limited with him. There aren't the reps. There wasn't the recruiting never really caught fire. He has just been a guy who has been very good and yet remained unknown. Angie Lance told me she had like recruiting services come to them constantly and say, you know, your son's behind, you need us, we'll get him in front of this coach and that coach. And she said every time that kind of nagged at her, that Carlton would come back and say, they'll find him. If he works hard and he's good enough, they'll find him. The whole development of Trey Lance is really an interesting study from a athletic standpoint and also from a parenting standpoint in a way too. And it's almost an old-fashioned attitude toward athletic development where it matters more what you do and how you handle yourself than who you know and who sees you and what the hype is by the time you're 13 years old.
Tim Kuhn, senior writer for ESPN. Yeah, you write your 5,000 words, you talk about it on ESPN daily, and occasionally you do a big video piece as well. Maybe you do an essay for Outside the Lines, and maybe you do a little television hit as well. 21st century journalism. Thanks to Tim for his time, and thank you for your time. I'm John Schrader. This is Watch the Media.